Welcome to 5-Minute Journal Club, Oral Surgeons Edition. This is medical oncologist Dr. Neil Love. On this program, Dr. Renate Jesselson from the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute comments on some of the most important recent publications and presentations on this new and evolving therapy of hormone receptor-positive breast cancer. One of the most discussed presentations at the December 2024 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium was the Phase 3 PATINA trial, evaluating the addition of the CDK4/6 inhibitor palbociclib to maintenance treatment with trastuzumab and pertuzumab in metastatic HER2-positive, ER-positive breast cancer in patients treated with THP induction. The positive, practice-changing results of this study with the addition of palbociclib has renewed interest in research in triple-positive disease, including a paper in the BMC Cancer Journal focusing on an ongoing Phase 3 clinical trial called HERID-ERA Breast Cancer, evaluating first-line treatment of metastatic ER-positive, HER2-positive disease with post-TCP maintenance with pertuzumab and trastuzumab for subcutaneous injection alone or with the as-yet-unapproved SERD, giredestrant.
So we don't see many trials like this because, you know, these patients are not so common. So it is sometimes hard to accrue to a study like this, and you need a multi-center study. So this study is looking at patients who receive induction treatment with a taxane, trastuzumab, and pertuzumab, and after 4 or 6 cycles of induction therapy are randomized to either HP, trastuzumab, pertuzumab plus giredestrant versus HP alone. You know, there's a lot of preclinical data about the interaction between HER2 and ER. We know that HER2 activates ER. We know that when ER is inhibited, HER2 goes up. So there's clearly an interaction between them, and there's quite a lot of compelling data showing that you need to inhibit both pathways in ER-positive, HER2-positive breast cancer.
Well, what about giredestrant again? It's hard to differentiate it at this point from the other SERDs.
Yeah. So again, I think the activity seems to be very similar in the lab. That seems to be also a good oral SERD with both antagonistic and degradation activity.
Can you comment on PATINA and in general where you see things heading with endocrine therapy and HER2-positive disease, including the use of SERDs?
Yeah, so PATINA was very exciting results that my colleague Otto Metzger presented. Basically, in this study, patients who had ER-positive, HER2-positive breast cancer and received induction treatment with a taxane, trastuzumab, and pertuzumab after the induction were randomized to trastuzumab, pertuzumab, and endocrine therapy versus trastuzumab, pertuzumab, an aromatase inhibitor, and palbociclib. And they showed really a significant improvement in progression-free survival that was really remarkable. So I think this study is practice-changing. And for patients with ER-positive, HER2-positive breast cancer, after induction therapy, for many, we are going to start offering the addition of palbociclib to endocrine therapy. And again, it will depend on the patient. This did add some toxicity, although it is overall well tolerated, but adding a CDK4/6 does add some toxicity to endocrine therapy. So we will have to look at other factors to decide who should be receiving this addition. But I think the data is really practice changing.
The next two papers are among a plethora of studies using the so-called real-world data gained from data on patients in clinical practice. First, a paper from the New England Journal of Evidence evaluating patients receiving treatment with CDK4/6 inhibitors, and then a second study presented at the December 2024 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium looking at patients with metastatic disease treated with elacestrant, currently the only approved oral SERD. To begin, Dr. Jesselson commented on the New England Journal Evidence paper.
This was a real-world study and they looked at CDK4/6 inhibitor together with fulvestrant versus CDK4/6 inhibitors with an aromatase inhibitor, and looked at the impact of ESR1 mutations on these combinations. And what they saw was that ESR1 mutations led to decreased progression-free survival when you had a CDK4/6 inhibitor plus an aromatase inhibitor. However, the ESR1 mutations did not impact the progression-free survival when you looked at the combination of a CDK4/6 inhibitor plus fulvestrant. And this really aligns with the data from the PADA-1 trial, where patients who were started on first-line treatment with a CDK4/6 inhibitor, palbociclib in this case, together with an aromatase inhibitor, were monitored for the ESR1 mutations. And if a patient had a gain in an ESR1 mutation, then they were randomized to either continuing the aromatase inhibitor together with palbociclib or switching to fulvestrant plus palbociclib, and they showed an improved progression-free survival with the combination of fulvestrant plus CDK4/6 inhibitor in this setting, all pointing that in combination with palbociclib, fulvestrant is better in the setting of an ESR1 mutation.
What about this other real-world study from San Antonio?
This was a real-world study where they looked at patients with metastatic ER-positive, HER2-negative breast cancers that had undergone ctDNA sequencing through Guardant. And they looked specifically at patients who had been treated with elacestrant, and they looked at their genomics and outcomes. So overall, when they looked at all patients in this cohort, they saw that the time to next treatment on elacestrant was overall comparable to what we saw in the Emerald study. So I think overall, these results are reassuring and overall comparable to what we saw in imlunestrant. Here they saw around 5 months progression-free survival in real-world data. They also looked at some of the genomics and outcomes based on some of the subgroups, and they showed that looking at Y537S ESR1 mutation versus the other mutations, there was no difference in outcomes. Interesting, they also looked at patients who received elacestrant as second line, third line, or fourth line and beyond, and saw that actually patients who received elacestrant even beyond second line, even third line or fourth line, had a pretty similar progression-free survival, telling us that there are patients where you can go back to single agent endocrine therapy and they still could benefit from endocrine therapy. And really, this is a pretty select patient population. Another thing that they showed that I thought was interesting was when they looked at patients with PIK3CA or mutations of the PI3 kinase pathway, they showed that those patients did indeed have decreased progression-free survival with elacestrant as monotherapy.
The next paper was presented at the 2023 ESMO meeting, evaluating the CNS activity of the oral SERD imlunestrant, an agent that is as yet unapproved.
This paper was a preclinical study. They looked at different models and the efficacy of single-agent imlunestrant, as well as the combination of imlunestrant with CDK4/6 inhibitors, alpelisib, and everolimus. In addition, they also looked at the penetrance of imlunestrant into the brain. So they looked at levels of imlunestrant in the CNS, and they saw that there was nice penetrance to the CNS, and it was really dose-dependent. And they also looked at a xenograft, so they injected MCF7 cells expressing the ESR1 mutations to the brain, and then saw activity of imlunestrant as a single agent to these lesions in the brain. So there is potential for activity of SERD in the CNS. You know, we're still lacking a lot of data on brain mets to understand, is the disease in the brain really the same? Are CNS metastases similar? How strong is ER activity in a CNS metastases? So these are things that my group, together with Nancy Lin at Dana-Farber, are starting to understand, and we're building cohorts of metastatic lesions for the brain to really look both at the cancers themselves and also the tumor microenvironment, which in the brain is very different. So potentially, you know, can a SERD have activity in the CNS? Possibly, you know, we still need, again, clinical data to show us really activity of a SERD in the brain. One concern of long-term use of endocrine therapy in the field has been the potential long-term effects on brain and potential of increase in dementia with long-term. I think, you know, there are observational studies, but we need more data to really see how real that is and if that is a potential downside of the use of long-term endocrine therapies or specifically long-term use of SERDs that penetrate the brain.
What do we know about CNS mets in terms of how often it occurs and when it occurs in patients with ER-positive disease as opposed to triple-negative and HER2-positive disease?
Yeah, so in ER-positive breast cancer, they occur usually later. So they usually occur after many lines of treatment compared to HER2-positive and triple-negative breast cancer. One thing to highlight is that lobular breast cancers do have a higher risk of leptomeningeal disease.
I was going to ask you again, I guess we don't know much about whether or not endocrine therapy works in a leptomeningeal disease. Have you ever had a case of a patient who responded or got treated with it?
No, I have not seen a patient who's responded with leptomeningeal disease to endocrine therapy. I mean, we are seeing very nice activity of trastuzumab deruxtecan in CNS disease in general. And I've also have had patients with leptomeningeal disease where we saw nice responses and really prolonged disease stability with trastuzumab deruxtecan.
That's really interesting. I didn't know about the leptomeningeal disease. We conclude this edition of 5-Minute Journal Club with a selective review of a number of ongoing and as yet unreported trials of oral SERDs in the adjuvant setting, beginning with a trial design involving a switch from standard adjuvant endocrine treatment to imlunestrant.
EMBER-4 is a phase 3 trial for patients with relatively high-risk early-stage ER-positive breast cancer who have completed 2 to 5 years of adjuvant endocrine therapy, so standard adjuvant endocrine therapy, and then are randomized to extended endocrine therapy with imlunestrant versus standard of care endocrine therapy. So there are additional at-large adjuvant endocrine therapies looking at the novel oral SERDs versus standard of care. Some of them, like Cambria-1, which is look at camizestrant, has a design very similar to EMBER-4. On the other hand, you have studies like Cambria-2 that are looking at this randomization already at the start of treatment. So it's for initial endocrine therapy comparing camizestrant versus standard of care. And then you have other studies. There's a study with elacestrant that is randomizing patients based on evidence of minimal residual disease based on ctDNA testing.
Yeah, the one idea that I kind of wonder about, and I guess, I don't know, ethically, is this idea of using a SERD up front as adjuvant therapy.
Yeah, so this comes up a lot, and we've had in our group a lot of discussions about this. In drug development, I think you would agree that in most cases, the adjuvant trials really opened only after approval of a drug in the metastatic setting. And here we are starting with adjuvant studies on drugs that have not yet been approved in the metastatic settings. Those are very hard questions. I think I'm more comfortable for extended endocrine therapy than upfront. But on the other hand, I think the data is strong that these drugs are at least comparable to aromatase inhibitors. You know, it's hard to say, are they going to be really better than aromatase inhibitors?